For those of you who are not familiar with Dr. DeGroot, let me give him a quick introduction. Dr. DeGroot graduated as a medical doctor in 1978, and he's been in full-time classical homeopathic practice for 28 years. His early work was influenced by a Dr. A. Plattis, under whose direction he developed pioneering work concerning clinical energetic examination in homeopathy, and he published in 1992 a very well-known book called Physical Examination and Observations in Homeopathy. Excellent work. He also published a second book called Notes on Miasms and Heredity in 1994. And over the past 18 years, Dr. DeGroot has been developing a database of dream information primarily from his own practice. This actually is going to be published electronically very soon in the RADAR program. Dr. DeGroot is also a member of a group called Brionia in Homeopathy, which stands for the Royal Belgian Association for Homeopathy. He's also involved with the International Institute for Advanced Homeopathic Investigations, and he's also a teacher at VSU, which is the Flemish Medical Association for Classical Homeopathy. He has a number of publications, including Analysis of the Chronic Miasms by J.H. Allen, Carcinosin, Magnesium Muriatica, Rumex, and many other works. Again, we're very, very pleased to have you join us today, and thank you again.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, so the topic today is the use of dreams in homeopathy, and I'm curious, Dr. DeGroot, how did you come to collect all this data, all this information about dreams and their use in homeopathy?
Yes, that's indeed an interesting question, because it's a little bit linked with my personal history as homeopath. As you said already, I started with some clinical observations. And that kind of observations, I came to a point that I could make a confirmation of the remedy I would prescribe. And that's an interesting item, because otherwise it's more error, trial and error. But now, by doing a very conscious energetic examination, I can evaluate directly if the remedy will be good or not. And following also Clark and other great homeopaths, I was starting years ago by making additions in the whole repertory for myself. So I made addition on the physical level on all chapters of the repertory. And when I was doing that, after 10, 50 years, I was becoming more and more interested in dreams, because patients were telling me dreams, and I was adding also information from their dreams to my database. And after a while, after some years, I could the more and more use that information. So I was going deeper and deeper by asking the dreams of the patients, and that led me in all that time build up a database, now about 150,000 additions. So when I can use it every day in my practice, and it's very, very useful, mostly in every patient.
Fantastic. Now, I know, Dr. DeGroot, that you put a lot of emphasis on the dream symptoms that come out in your patients. And I'm curious, why do you put more emphasis on the dreams than you actually do even on the physical or mental-emotional symptoms?
Yes. It's right. And when a patient is coming for the first time, you get so much information of your patient that you can use that information easily for a correct first prescription. And if that prescription is very good, maybe you can use that prescription some frequent times after the first one you prescribed it. But a big problem normally comes when the patient returns and the first prescription don't act anymore. And then you're obliged to look for new information. You you got already some new information, but you have to build up a new picture, a remedy picture, with the new information. And in that way, dreams can be very important because they deliver us that information. Because normally a patient doesn't change from character. He's staying a little bit the same person. But by looking in his dreams, you find a lot of changes, a lot of emotions and sensations which come up, which are new, and then you can more easily find a new remedy which will fit with the patient.
Interesting. Dr. De Groot, you know, the different practitioners, different homeopathic practitioners out there have different opinions about, you know, dreams, what role they play in the life of an individual, how to use them in homeopathy. I know, for example, Rajan Sankaran says that the dreams belong to the level of the delusion in the patient. I'm curious, how do you see the dreams? Where do you see them being situated in the life of the patient in terms of in what relationship do they have to the rest of the symptoms and qualities that the patient produces?
Yeah. Yes, indeed. according to Rajan Sankaran, he's placing the dreams in his level of delusion, that is level 4. And he likes to go what he calls deeper to the sensation, level 5, or to the expressions, the body language of the patient also, which he gives the level 6, for example. In my experience, I see that dreams go till to the deepest root of the energetic identity of the person. And so they bring to surface the deepest sensations of the person too. So I do not agree from my own experience that dreams only have the level of delusion. I think they go very, very deep into the unconscious of the person and bring up very energetic loaded symptoms. For example, Rajan Sankaran, it's a very good technique he uses. He uses the technique of the free association. And so he tries to go to another level than what the patient wants to tell about his physical complaints. So he brings him finally in an emotionally loaded sphere wherein the verbal expression and the body language can stand in the center and where he makes associations with things he would not think about in reality. And that he uses in a lot of cases to find the basic energy of the patient. And I think when using dreams, that you can start directly from the dream themes of the patients, which are originating from the unconsciousness, and you can ask the patient to make associations. So you make sometimes direct associations on the dream themes, and then you get the underlying emotions and sometimes the nucleus elements of the remedy you look for. For example, it is known that in the REM sleep, that when you are waking somebody who is dreaming and you ask the person to make associations, he will give you very bizarre and illogical things, because he is on that moment in a hyper-associative state. So it will say that if one is dreaming, one is in a hyper-associative state and is a little bit the same as the free associations Rajan Sankaran is using in his practice. But you have easy material to judge and to ask questions to the patients by collecting dreams.
Dr. DeGroote, it sounds like you're fairly familiar with Rajan Sankaran's approach. I'm curious, have you studied his method, and do you use it in your practice as well?
No, I always been interested in what Rajan Sankaran did because he was one of the pioneers in using dreams.
Yeah.
But I'm not applying his method.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's enormously useful, but there is a distinction between what Rajan Sankaran is doing and maybe the way I'm doing. And I will explain. Rajan Sankaran, the more and more less aside his repertory. He tries to enter totally into the energy of the patient. But before you can do that, you have to have a very good knowledge of the materia medica, because it sometimes, in a lot of cases, he doesn't look into the repertory. It's of less and less importance for him.
Mm.
Maybe you can do it when you are a homeopath who know amazingly much about materia medica, because then you can make a choice more easy.
Mm.
But for a beginner, he is changed to the repertory, because when he hears a symptom, he likes to find it in the repertory to know what remedies are in the rubric and to make a better choice. And in fact, I started 25 years or more ago by making additions, and I find it helpful because you cannot memorize everything every patient is saying.
Mm.
So it's easy, especially with the computer, to make a database and to put it in that database. And then you can find it again, and because the knowledge of the materia medica is increasing for yourself, it becomes indeed easier and easier to make a decision about a remedy.
Mm. So it sounds actually that you're fairly classically oriented homeopath who is simply using that method to investigate the value of dream symptoms in homeopathic practice. Is that correct? Am I getting that correctly?
Yes, that's seemingly correct.
Yes.
Yes, I'm using only one individual remedy, but maybe something I was adding about the 17 years ago, and that was the publication of Notes on Miasms, that is that by the individual remedy, we only treat the personal energy of the patient, but not the ancestral energy.
Hmm.
And so After years, I was founding in a blockage after a good remedy, frequently a classical nosode.
Mm.
And so the more and more I am giving the individual remedy, sometimes in connection with that classical nosode.
Mm.
And that gives a very, very good result. And why that classical nosode? It's linked with ancestral energy, and the ancestral energy is loaded with a lot of negative aspects of our health, maybe degenerative diseases, cancer, heart infarction, and so on. So you can do preventive work with it. And I see after 25 years, indeed the results of it in my patients. It's very, very seldom that one of my patients has cancer or has a heart attack and so on. So it gives a very, very good feeling by doing it in connection, the individual remedy like the classical homeopath, and in the last 15 years, I'm adding in a lot of cases an azote, and that gives a very good elan to the energetic evolution of the patient.
And Dr. DeGroote, when you do this, you give the nosode at the same time as the remedy for the patient, or you give it at a separate time?
It's a good question.
Yeah.
In the beginning, I did it in a separate time. So I was giving the individual remedy, and it happened that the patient came back after 5 days about, and he said, I was quite well during the first day. I was just health, cured. And then I got the fallback. And by applying the energetic examination of the method I explained in the first book, I saw it was not the individual remedy that must be taken again, but an azote. And mostly it is psorhinum. And after giving psorhinum, the case was going directly well, without repeating of the individual remedy. And that is something very curious, but it is an amazing thing that our energy is consisting of two kinds of energy. Like acupuncture, now we have the individual energy, which corresponds with our normal homeopathic remedies, and we have a kind of a ancestral heredity loaded energy, which corresponds with the classical nozodes. Not so much carcinosinum, medurinum, tuberculinum, syphilinum, but not psorhinum. In that way, that psorhinum is very prominent, but is not so acting on degenerative diseases. But it's an ancestrally loaded remedy too, because it, most of the cases it's psorhinum, but it do not prevent for diseases in connection with psychosis or syphilis of or tuberculinum or so. But it's the most common psorhinum.
You know, Dr. De Groot, I have a very similar experience in my own practice, and it's something I find very curious, because there are many very well-known homeopaths out there who maintain that they basically never give nozodes. And I'm always surprised, and because these are people who I respect and consider to be very good practitioners. One of them, for example, is Dr. Andre Sain, who I believe very rarely, if ever, hardly uses nozodes in his practice. And I'm always curious about that, because in my own practice, I don't know how I would be able to practice treating chronic disease without the nozodes.
Yeah.
So, for me, they're like invaluable in being able to bring the patient to a state of cure.
Yeah. Yes, I
have the same experience.
Yes, and I think it's not only us who has the same experience. It was already Henry Allen and other homeopaths, for Bister and other ones, who already brought to us that idea when there is a blockage in the case, think about an azote.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more than that. Even when not a blockage, you can give more speed to the recovery of a patient when you can evaluate and choose an azote which is indicated and to give it.
Mm.
But that's not always easy. Mm. So it's better to wait till there is a real blockage and then to give an azote.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Drew, going back to the dreams, talking about dreams, I know that, there's a, dreams really coming out of the psychological movement and people like Freud. Is it necessary to have an understanding of the psychoanalytical concepts that are associated with dream work? Is this necessary for a practitioner to utilize this type of information?
Yes, I think people think too easy that if they have not psychoanalytic experience or education, that they cannot use dreams. But we know as homeopaths, because they were written down, the dreams in Materia Medica already since 200 years, we know that sometimes in the beginning of our practice with dreams, that sometimes if we use dreams, that we find symptoms which gives us directly the remedy, like a keynote. But we know indeed that the repertory is incomplete in that way. So we are a little bit afraid to use dreams because we know it's indeed good stuff, but it's not complete. And so it will say that normally we do not really know, we do not need really psychoanalytic concepts. But it can help. Sometimes if we really enter into dreams, it can help to understand better dreams, because when we go, we look as Freud was doing the first, because he was bringing to mankind the knowledge of dreams, that it was not something worthless, but something of of the depth of people with a lot of value, and expresses to the conscious something of the subconscious. So it was interesting to know that he was showing us that dreams were showing us wishes, emotions on a lot of levels, for him also on the sexual level. But we know that when someone is dreaming and it resembles a fairy tale, it can give us information, for example, to a remedy which fits with the way Freud is looking to it and fits with the way we as homeopath are looking to it. I maybe can give you an example later, but the beginning of dreams I was fascinated by was by the Sinoy tribe, who is a Malaysian tribe and a very primitive people, but they use already since centuries dreams to communicate and to evade conflicts, and they were succeeding in it. And it's why they were taking dreams as real, that if they were blaming someone or have a conflict with someone, that they in the morning were going to that person for apologizing themselves. And so the emotions of their dream, they consider it as real, and they take the consequences of it. So it was a good balance for their inner state of being. They always restored. That was a very good beginning. And indeed, in most of the cases, we can consider dreams as real. We know the story is imaginary. The patient tells us something and it's not real. It's not literally to be taken, but the emotions, everything he projects in him to other people or from other people to him, are his own emotions. And that is important, because that kind of emotions we can use in homeopathy, and there must be, those emotions must be present in our prescription of our remedy. Is it
very interesting?
Clear?
For those people who are not familiar with the Sinoy, just want to spell it for people. It's S-E-N-O-I.
Yes.
Actually, you can purchase, I think they have dream work manuals from the Sinoy that are very interesting, where they discuss it, lucid dreamings. Yes. I remember reading those many years ago, and those are fascinating. So thank you for mentioning those. It's a very, very interesting thing. I'm curious, what kind of dreams and specifically dream themes can we use as a homeopath? I mean, is everything usable, or only specific things that are usable? How do you do it in your own practice? I'll give you an example. So sometimes there are some people out there who say that the dreams are only important if they're recurrent.
Yeah.
Some people say, you know, like only if you have this dream all the time does it have any value as a practitioner. I'm curious, that and how do you use them in general?
That's right. Yes, a lot of people think that if a dream does come back, you cannot use that dream. And that's not the case, because you can use every dream, because in every dream there is a lot of chance that you have an emotional conflict and that you are going through it. And so that emotional conflict is you are going through in the way you are. So in your proper way, in your way, you need your energy is built, you're going through. So you show to the interpreter, the physician, the homeopath, how you are reacting on certain emotions. So every dream in that way is important. And it's not at all correct that you have to have dreams repeated before you can use them. If it was like that, then it would be a little bit poor for us to use dreams, because there is a rubric in our repertory which is repeated dreams, and there are only some remedies in that rubric. So if you are limiting your case taking to repeated dreams, then you limit it maybe you to that few remedies which are in that rubric. And my experience is that every dream can be used as dream to find a remedy. And the themes that we look for are also special, because we have the sensation of the patient, and we can ask after the patient was, after he was awake, and what was your impression during the dream, what was your impression after the dream when you was awake, and then he can give you indeed a lot of information about what he felt himself while having that dream, or afterwards, what sensation he had, a guilty sensation, a sensation of, I don't know what, but something very deep and which makes him a little bit out of balance. And that can be very useful to use. There are, we know also a lot of themes which are in connection with the signature of the remedy. And that is maybe a theme in connection with our knowledge about homeopathic remedies, because it's difficult to recognize a signature theme in the dream when you do not have much experience with remedies. I can give you I can give you an example. Because we are connected with everything in our dreams, and that's something amazing. So we are not more on the conscious level, but we go very deep to the subconscious, and we come in connection with even the collective unconsciousness. So we are connected with everything on earth, and also in connection with influences from the cosmos. For example, a dream of a man who was coming to me, he said he had a dream, and he dreamt that he was inspecting an apartment to buy. And he was very surprised that the apartment he was looking to had only one window, and it was directed to the north side. And indeed, one would think, what can you do with an apartment with one window only directed to the north side? So he was doubting in his dream if he would buy or not. But the element why somebody is dreaming such a strong feature is, you have to reflect about what will be the remedy. And normally, we like a window for the sun, that the sun and the light can enter. But on the north side, there is never sun in that specific direction. The only light which comes in is from the pole star. So we know we have a remedy, Polaris, from the pole star. And through that dream, we could directly find that remedy. So I prescribed him the the remedy Polaris, the Polestar, and he has a pain in the knee, in the hollow of the knee, and I twice already cured somebody with a pain in the hollow of the knee with Polaris. To give an example of for example, a kind of a signature or a special information from the unconscious with who we are connected, with we are connected.
Very interesting. Dr. DeGroote, you said that all dreams are useful. No exceptions? You never find sometimes the patient has a dream and you can't relate it to the case at all? Or no exceptions? You always find that they're useful?
That's not true, that every dream is useful, but most of them are useful, but especially the dreams who are connected with reality, with things which happened the day before, with things which will happen tomorrow, that such dreams belong to the category of occasional dreams. But there is sometimes an exception that such a dream is not important, because it happens that somebody is dreaming about his house and about the household he is doing or she is doing. And on the background, there is something which doesn't fit with reality. And then that background element you have to take because it's something original or striking, and you must put it on the foreground. And that background element, it can be a little detail, but it can be interesting. For example, somebody tells you that he notices that the window stands open and that the curtains are flapping in the wind. That's, for example, a dream I found in Pulsatilla and in a little more remedies, but not in so much. And it seems to be interesting. It's a detail, but it can be useful to give you a hint.
Very interesting. Dr. DeGroote, it's obvious that you've done quite a bit of research and study in dreams in general. I'm curious, how do you see dreams in general, not from specifically a homeopathic point of view, but just in the terms of a person's life? Is it healthy to dream? What about people who don't dream? How do you look at this? My personal understanding is that everybody does dream, but some people don't remember it.
Yeah,
is that true, or do some people not dream? Could you share a little bit of insight into this?
Mm-hmm. Indeed, dreaming for everybody is known as being healthy. People who do not absolutely dream are or very healthy, because they live in contact with their true feelings, and so they live in the hink et nunc, so they do not need some compensation or putting again something on the right place during the night by dreaming. So those people can be very healthy, but most of people who do not dream are rather very sick. There is one exception. There are people who cannot remember their dreams, or they have very, very much difficulty to remember them. And that people are not specifically very sick, but they are too less in touch with their own inner being. So that's, and on that moment, you can explain the people that they much meditate more, that it's necessary to try have contact with their inner sensation, and then they will have also some messages by dreams to the conscious, and that can help them a lot to be more happy and to be more in their self.
Very interesting. Dr. DeGroote, there's a question that I like to ask pretty much everybody when they participate in one of these interviews, and it has to do with whether there's just one similimum for a patient, or are there a series of remedies that we give over a period of time to bring a patient to a state of health? And, you know, there are various opinions about this out there in the homeopathic community. I thought perhaps you could speak from your experience of working with dreams in terms of this question. Do you find when you work with the dreams, do you find that there's a consistent one similimum that runs through the whole patient's life, or do you find that you need to give different remedies over the course of a patient's life?
Yeah. Yes, that's a very good question. I can give you sure my answer on that question, and that answer is that I do not think there is one similimum for the whole lifetime. And also Masi, I was following Masi a lot of years. He said, I have only about 5% of my patients who correspond to always the same remedy, the similimum. But in 95% or more, he saw a succession of different remedies. And I think our predecessors had the same experience.
Yeah, that's because certainly what Hahnemann and Haring and all those people, and Lippe,
the lists of remedies that follow well and the complementary remedies. Yeah. And we know that by experience that is, it's a very good list to, which is not complete, but it's something of great value. And I use it, and I have added also a lot of remedies as following well of complementary, and I can use it very, very well. So the conclusion is that there are in succession different remedies in lifetime. And my experience is also when administering an appropriate nosode, the change to another remedy will go quicker, because I do not believe that that you need only a similimum for lifetime, because it's like you are a static, that you are in a static energetic state. And we know that life is a dynamic process. So when you touch your case, and it can be at the age of 5 or at 1 year old or at 4 months old, but also at 45 years old or later, when you start late, you can use all the information of since birth to find your remedy. But once you touched the energy of the patient and you started the energy to make an evolution, it is possible that you have to change your remedy in the future. So my experience is that I need to change my remedies, but that the results are amazing good. And by using nosodes, when I'm using on the right moment the appropriate nosode, I see that the patient is developing better, but that he changes more quickly to another remedy.
Dr. De Groot, do you find that when you have to change the remedy, that the themes of the dreams will also change?
Yes, that's especially by the dreams you find your information to change your remedy. It's not by that, because normally the patient can tell you, comes to see you on a checkup consultation and says, I'm very, very fine. You are giving me a fantastic remedy. And then I'm informing about his dreams, and I'm amazed that the dreams now point to another remedy.
Interesting.
So I normally, when I was in the beginning, you have to follow the advice of Kent, repeat the remedy till there is no reaction. I did it in the beginning, but now I can control it by the energetic examination. And what I see is indeed that the themes of the dream are correct for another remedy than the first one I started with. So I'm following that energetic examination and I change my remedy with very good results. And it happens that later on the remedy sometimes comes back. So I do not know, is there there is an interactivity between remedies, that's sure, and that can make that a circle is like kind of a spiral is formed, and that you are that there was an evolution in space, and on that moment you can come to the same remedy again, but not as the same minimum for always. That's my experience about.
Very fascinating. Dr. De Groot, I know there's different classifications of dreams, and I know you've done quite a bit of research into this area. Could you share a little bit about the different types of dreams that exist out there, different categories?
About the different categories, yes.
And different types of dreams?
Yeah.
Is that something that you feel comfortable answering?
What did you say?
Is that something you feel comfortable with, talking about that?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Some categories of dreams, yeah, there are a lot of them. You can say it. There are two kinds of cataloging dreams. You can say it's dreams like anxious dream, nightmares, historical dreams, wishing dreams, that are dreams we try to give a title. But some people think that a nightmare is more important than a quiet dream. That's not true. Nightmares are often not as important as a normal dream, but it's something which in the dream is peculiar. For example, an exaggeration of something which can't be true, because in dreams, when something is not true, when we look at it by our rational mind, then it's important. We are also in our dreams very rational, and when we do not, it's to show us something by a magnifying glass that there is something wrong which fits with the remedy. That is, I think, very interesting. But in my practice, I see also remedy, like I told, like Freud was telling about sexual suppression, that when we understand things which happen, that we can recognize those things also. And Jung was telling us also a lot of things about archetypes, and so we see that we can find also things in that way. But there is a lot of things we can recognize, and especially the things we know about the remedies come forward also in the dreams. There is no an exception that dreams will give us other information, especially for remedies we know very well. If we have remedies we do not know very well, so dreams can enrich the knowledge of those remedies. So, for example, I was studying also Dictamnus album, the burning bush, and there is only one dream noticed in that remedy. And following my experience, by using also dreams from which are reflected in the signature of the tree, because he can suddenly take fire for some seconds and then it's over, but the tree is unhurt. So sometimes we hear that theme in the dream, and then we have to think about that remedy. And so I have found already in my own repertory 81 dream symptoms of that remedy, Dictamnus album. So you see, by casuistry, including dreams, and also by casuistry of other homeopaths without dreams, for example, we can have a better knowledge of what we call the small remedies, and so we can build up a better picture of those remedies.
We're running short on time, and it's such an interesting conversation. I'm curious, could you share, are there any books or resources that you would suggest that would help people learn how they could use dreams in their practice,
homeopathic
practice?
Yeah. Yes. So you was telling that I was publishing two books, but indeed I published a third one about dreams, but it was in Dutch in my native language. And now I'm busy to finish the translation of that book to the English language. The book has about 900 pages, and it's only about dreams, because there are some few books about dreams, but they do not show everything about. Some people, as Sankaran, as Jürgen Becker, as and other people, Kees Dam and so on, were bringing me also in the earlier years in contact with dreams. And on a certain point, when I was busy with my database, I found it interesting to give something that homeopaths can use to look to dreams. So it is a book 900 pages thick, and the introduction of about 75 pages is a little bit the stuff we are talking about now, how you look to dreams and what's important and how you can define a theme and so on. And then the following 800 pages are examples of remedies, and of rare remedies. I prefer to give examples of rare remedies to show you how you find that remedy by looking to the dreams. For example, Prometheum or Elaterium or Dictamnus of Dioscorea, remedies like that, so that you learn by looking through the same glasses as I do to the dreams, so you learn how to look at dreams and how to make an interpretation and to find a remedy. And I hope that book will be published next year and available for everyone in the English language.
Ah, fantastic. And Dr. De Groot, what about your repertory? Can you tell us a little bit about that?
The repertory is finished, so it is available, I think, from now in Radar. It was taking 5 years to be available, because I am working every day to that repertory. And but it's a big stuff, because I have to do the most of the work. It's normal, but it's an amazing thick. If you would print it out, it would be as thick as the repertory of Kent, I think.
Wow.
So it's better. It is in. It's only available by computer. So it can be graded up more easily when there is more data to add. It will be easy to do that. But it's very useful, and it's built up just like our normal repertory alphabetically, but there are a lot of rubrics, and those rubrics are very detailed. It will say, if you have a rubric of water or fire, it is not only rubric dreams of water. It will explain in what situation the water is there. Okay? For example, we have, and sometimes I was looking to a number of cases, I was looking to the materia medica, because some remedies are only there dreams of water, and when you are looking, it's totally something different. For example, I think about Murex. He is dreaming of the sea, and then when you look to the materia medica, it's not that he is bathing in the sea or something else. No, he's dreaming about a flood, and the flood is coming from the sea over a pasture, a meadow, and he's walking in that meadow, and it's a swampy meadow with water from the sea. That's the context of the dream of Murex. And there are a lot of dreams, so you can specify more exactly what happens. Not only dreams of fire, dreams of water. For example, dreams of flying. You can fly on different ways. You can fly with arm stretches apart. You can fly on your back. You can fly like Superman. You can make movements like a bird, and so on. So everything is entered into detail, and you see the remedies which belong to each sub-rubric. And that's a little bit advantage of the computer. You can put more details in what I did.
And how many remedies are included in the dream repertory?
I think it's a reflection of the remedies I'm using. I think it must be about 1,200.
About 1,200 remedies. Yeah, that's a lot. That's quite a large number of remedies, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I see that we're basically at the time when I should switch over. I would love to continue to ask you questions. It's a fascinating discussion, but I'd like to give some other people an opportunity to also ask questions. So I'm going to go ahead and unmute the lines, and we've got a few minutes here. And please feel free to ask Dr. DeGroot any questions. Hold on one second. So, hi, is there any questions for Dr. DeGroot?
I have one.
Please go ahead.
Okay, this is Lois Bergman from Minnesota. Hi, Kim, and to Dr. DeGroot. I'm wondering about clarification. You were talking about using the classical remedy plus a nosode. And I didn't quite catch how you administer the nosode and the remedy. Do you alternate? I think Kim asked, do you alternate or do you give them at the same time? And I guess I'm asking, if you give them at the same time, how do you do that? Whether you mix one remedy with the two remedies in one pellet or bottle, or how you do that?
Okay. It's when I'm giving the two remedies at the same time, my experience is that it's very important that you can do it like that. And if you do it yourself, you give the remedy to the patient, you can mix those two remedies or you can give them one after the other. But my experience is that something very important is that if you do that like that, the patient may not wink the eyes. He must stay with the eyes open. It's something from practice I had found that when people are winking the eyes during the first remedy, then the remedy will arrive. That first remedy will change the energy, but the second will not arrive. And the best way to do, I think, is to give it separately and to wait 30 minutes or more to give the nosode after the individual remedy. So you can do it together if you are sure they fit the two remedies, but if you do not trust how they take it, it's better to take it separately, for example, at minus 30 minutes between. Is it enough as answer, or do you want to know more?
Is that adequate?
That's very helpful. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Other questions, please, for Dr. DeGroot?
Can you clarify what you mean by energy examination?
Yeah. That's also a good question, a little bit apart from the dreams, but indeed, everything what happens in a living being, also in a human being, is energy. And homeopathy and acupuncture are, I think, from the view of energy, are the same. So if we appropriate, if we learn to work with the energetic model of acupuncture, and we can apply it, we can apply homeopathy on that model, then we can control the remedy we will prescribe. And I learned it from Hoedtgaard with his way of doing kinesiology, but I do it on another way. It's not only, I'm looking to all the meridians and their connected muscles and acupuncture points, and I'm controlling for each remedy which meridian is weakened and which muscle who is depending from that meridian will be weakened or will be hypertonic. And also some acupuncture points, we know the Weyer points, which are also acupuncture points, are also out of balance. And it's amazing how good we can control our remedies by that. But we have to know that that is a very good control, but if there is a disturbing factor in the environment, for example, too much electricity or mobile phones or people who wear metallic objects, that can disturb the exact interpretation of that examination. So for me, I do that already, and I was the founder of that method for homeopathy. I do it very exactly, but as well myself as the patient must. It is not allowed to have something of metal on the body, buttons or something else that must be removed. Otherwise, it's like making a Rix photograph, and you are keeping on things in metal and so on, so it disturbs the image. That's a little bit what I can tell you now, and I do not know if it's sufficient for you.
That's great, Dr. De Groot. Okay. Actually, I had another question I wanted to ask you just really quickly. You know, if you look at, especially in the better represented remedies, like the polycrests, and you look at in the repertory all the dreams that are listed, there are many different dreams that will be listed for these remedies. And sometimes there will be some consistent themes, or then there will be other themes. I'm curious, do you find that the different themes within a remedy are related to that remedy? In other words, within the if there's dreams of murdering and dreams of killing, but then there's also dreams of traveling, within the context of that remedy, these different dream themes are related? Or are they just distinct things that can happen in any patient who needs that remedy? Am I making myself clear?
I hope that I understand your question well. You will say there are contradictory themes
in the same remedy, yes.
Yeah, in the same remedy.
Yes.
But I think in every remedy there are contradictory symptoms.
Yes.
And it's like the animus load in every person. There is often something contradictory, because the one extreme makes to come up the other extreme. And in the beginning, you do not see that it's joining together. And that's important when you are, for example, when I was studying the dreams, and it's always very, you can learn very much by studying the dreams of patients who were going well, and then to look what is coming, and then you see the more and more the flow of the energy which is going through and which connect indeed things which are on the first side opposite. So I think and especially in polycrest, we do not have so much dreams of polycrest, because they were too easy satisfied when somebody was telling I'm dreaming about water or fire. If, for example, sulfur, fire is coming down from heaven. It's like Lucifer. It's a punishment of God who is throwing fire, a lightning maybe, on people. It's very fantastic to see those dreams, that they were already noticed in some centuries ago. But there is more when we have, for the moment, polychrist with only superficial rubrics. Now we have the opportunity by noticing the data of the new dreams. We see now the more and more how rich those polychrists are also. Because small remedies in the last 20 years, the provings especially were dream provings. So we know already a lot about dreams of the new remedies, of some small remedies which were proved in the last years, but the old polychrists we do not know so much, because we do not do again those provings. And by looking to the patients who react well on those polychrists, we can add, and I do it, we add new rubrics, more specific rubrics for those polychrists. And it makes more a unity of that remedy.
Well, I know that I personally have a lot of other questions that I would like to ask Dr. DeGroote, but I see that, I'm sure other people do as well, but I see that we're unfortunately at the end of the hour. Perhaps you'd like to join us again in the future to do another one of these. I think people would very much appreciate it. I want to thank you personally again for taking the time to join us. If everyone can give Dr. DeGroote a big North American thank you, that would be fantastic.
Thank you very much,
Dr. DeGroote.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. DeGroote.
Thank you. So thank you again.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.